Agenda item number seven, we're going to have a discussion concerning some of the public notices on permits.
That's correct. This is a discussion item for your consideration of update suggestions we have for Regulation 4 VAC 20-120 pertaining to the promulgation of public notice on applications to encroach in, on, or over subaqueous lands of the Commonwealth. Really, we're making an attempt here to, we think, streamline the Commission's permit review process and allow for expedited permit issuance in certain cases. And this regulation really has not been before the Commission since it was last considered in the mid-80s. So it's really time for an update. A few administrative procedures have changed over that period of time, especially related to our coordination of the joint permit application and the joint public notice with the Corps of Engineers. We felt it was appropriate to clarify that relationship a bit. And also, there's a number of projects that we deal with routinely that are either covered by a general permit or replacements of structures that are destroyed by storm or fire or previously permitted, or that need to be expedited as a result of code action. And so we didn't really think a public notice was necessary in those cases since it really served no purpose. And so we thought we could expedite and streamline our permit process by listing a few of those exemptions. So what I'd like to do is go through those changes with you here that we have proposed. And at the end of that discussion or our discussion today, what we're asking you to do is allow us to take this to our regulatory review committee, iron out any details that we might have missed sort of at the draft level putting this together, and then bring it back to you with a request to go to public hearing, and then we go through the public interest review process, publish the notice, and bring it back to you at a later date. So anyway, with that said, what I've done here is taken a couple sections of the draft changes that were part of your packet, and what I'm showing here is a section that makes a bit of a switch in terms of where the priority is for notice of the project. Previously, the regulation had called for the use of the Corps' joint public notice in almost every situation. Well, a couple things have happened over the last 20 or 30 years. The Corps has gone strictly to an online notice process and an email distribution. They got away from any letter distribution or paper distribution of their notice. When they made that change, it may not be as big a deal now with everybody having access to the internet and having email, but when they made that change some years ago, we felt like it was a bit premature and that not everybody would had access to computer information or the web or email. And so we said we're going to use the public notice in the paper, which was also an option in our regulation as it existed, but we went almost entirely to that. The other thing that's happened over time is the Corps of Engineers, in most of their cases in title projects, the vast majority of projects fall within a nationwide permit authorization or a general permit authorization, regional authorization from the Corps of Engineers, so they don't get a public notice anyway because they qualify for those nationwide or regional permits or general permits from the Corps. So we were having to notice it anyway. So we thought the better thing to do was turn that around in the regulation and just stipulate that our notices would be published in the paper, but that we could use in some situations a Corps of Engineers public notice depending on the nature of the project. There are some very big projects where the Corps public notice gets very wide distribution, it's well known, and provides a good opportunity for us to utilize that rather than have to run something on the paper. So we wanted to provide that option. The other thing we've inserted here, and whether or not we can work this out is yet to be seen, but what we'd like to have the Commission's blessing to pursue at least is posting the notice on our website. When we post it in the paper, we would concurrently post it on our website, and it would be active on our website while it was active basically in the paper. And the idea would be that once the public notice expired in the paper, it would come off of our website. So there might be some folks out there who are looking at the web, are looking at our site, could get the public information that way that might not be looking at local papers. Plus, we think it kind of sets the stage for the future that everything's going to web-based notices, and it may be sometime down the road. I don't think we're ready for it yet. I can ask an old-time reporter, but I don't know that we're ready to get entirely out of the notices in the paper yet, but I think sometime down the road we might need to do that and just go with our web-based notice here at the agency. And this would begin that transition to that sort of type of a notice. And all of this is really wrapped around our joint permit application process here at the Commission. As you well know, there's one application filled out. It's submitted to the Marine Resources Commission, and we distribute it to other agencies for their use, like the local wetland boards, DEQ, and the Corps of Engineers. And they process it at the same time concurrently, but each agency, wetland board included, have to issue their own separate permits. So we did recognize here that we'd provide copies of any comments we received to the Corps and Department of Environmental Quality for their consideration. And that was part of the old regulation. But moving on, within the proposed changes we're making, we're specifying that the Commission will require public notice on all applications for which a submerged lands permit is required, but that there will be several exceptions to when we don't require a notice. And those are listed here. Again, this is in that draft that was provided with your packet. We want to clarify in our regulation that where we have a general permit and no notice is required. And we have a couple of general permits where we specifically specify that. But that's not mirrored in our public notice regulations. So we want to make them consistent. That's the reason for that first bullet. The next two are replacement of structures either previously permitted by the Commission for which we're issuing a new permit to rebuild it for some reason. It just got old. It needs to be redone. It's in the same footprint. We usually don't run into problems with those types of projects. They've been there. Everyone knows about them. And secondly, or the third item here for replacement projects is those that were destroyed by storm or fire, natural disaster. You can remember a few months ago we had Amory's Seafood. Right. You know, they were in a hurry to get up and running again right after their facility was destroyed by fire. But one thing we had to do in that case was run a public notice to make sure that there was no opposition based on our regulation. And nothing came of that, but again, we're not so sure that that's a type of project that really needs a public notice. I do want to remind you, as I'm going through this list, all of these projects require permits from the Commission. So we're not doing away with the permit requirement. We're getting it at the staff level. We're making evaluations. We're making sure oyster grounds aren't involved or, you know, public rocks aren't involved, something like that. And so we're reviewing it internally, but it just doesn't require the public notice. Item four, taking of settlement samples for engineering and geotechnical analysis. This is something that's done quite often by big construction projects. They need to go out and take large vibratory cores that might go down 10, 20, 30 feet to determine sediment type for geotechnical analysis. And it's been our position based on the wording in the code that those types of bottom activities, encroachments, and removal of material should require a permit. But they're not building anything there. It's not permanent. It's just a temporary sampling method. So we're not sure that really needs a public notice. Occasionally, someone will need to do a little grab sample. We've not been requiring permits for a little Ponar dredge to go down and take a sort of a service sample. VIMS does coring for us quite often. They're authorized by code to conduct scientific technical research with us, so they haven't required permits. Corps of Engineers, they're covered through their federal authority to go out and do this kind of thing for their dredging projects, but it's those individual large construction projects that might need this permit. And we could just give them a permit, make sure, again, that oyster grounds aren't involved, public grounds aren't involved, that type of thing, but we wouldn't go through the public notice process. The next item, five on your list here, is recover of objects from state-owned submerged lands that aren't known to be historic. Back in the 80s, the Commission developed a process by which we would issue permits related to underwater exploration activities in sort of two phases. And this is related to folks who are looking for underwater historic sites or just interested in using metal detectors in state waters to find objects. And that process that was developed back in the 80s did not require a public notice for what we call an exploration permit. That's giving someone a permit to go out, look at the bottom using a metal detector or scuba and retrieve a few items to determine the historic nature of the find that they might have come across. However, there are situations where we know it's historic property there. This doesn't allow the recovery of that type of item. Or we've designated a few areas on state submerged lands that are off limits to exploration activities with a metal detector based on coordination with the Department of Historic Resources, where there are known historic resources. And a lot of those sites have been identified through people using this underwater exploration permit, metal detectors. They have to report to us. They're required to report to us everything they find, and it goes to the Department of Historic Resources. And when they see that enough has been found in a given area indicating there's some potential for historic resources, we have marked those areas as off limits. And the permits that we issue for these activities have a long list of excluded areas in them. And again, this is one of those administrative procedures that was developed years ago that the requirement for a notice didn't quite mesh with our public notice regulation. The next item on your list is restoration of sand on publicly owned beaches damaged by sand erosion. Back in 2016, a code amendment was made to 28.2.1207 that required the commission to expedite projects for sand replenishment at public beaches following a natural disaster or a declaration of emergency by the governor. And what this would allow is us to get something in from, let's say, the city of Virginia Beach after a storm. They want to put some sand on the beach, but it also is going to go out and channel to low water. This would allow us to review that application, make sure it's acceptable, that what they're doing is reasonable, and just issue the permit very quickly rather than have to go through a public interest review process and delay that permit issuance to recover from a storm event. And again, it's consistent with code. The last item there is private piers requiring a permit pursuant to 28.2.1205D of the Code of Virginia. This is the code section that deals with private piers over private oyster leases. And it indicates we shall issue a permit for that private pier, which are normally exempt, except when they go across a productive lease. But what the code requires us to do, work with the leaseholder and the pier applicant, and potentially try to find the least damaging area on the lease for that pier, and then we have to issue that permit. So there's no real question of whether the permit can be issued, so there's no real need for public notice. We're only dealing between the pier builder and the oyster ground leaseholder in these situations. So we've added that one in here as a potential exemption as well. And I know when I talked to the commissioner about this, he suggested that we might clarify 7 and what that's related to, and we could add some language in there that's related to piers over private leases. So anyway, those are the ideas we have to try and expedite and streamline our permit process. Those are the exemptions, and those would be the ideas for updates to our regulation for public notice. So I think what we're asking is your concurrence to move forward with these concepts, go through our regulatory review committee, and then bring back a draft to you after that's done, and then request a public hearing at that time.
Thank you, Tony. I'd say it's more than past time to review these type of things here. I mean, once every 25-plus years,
yeah,
maybe.
Virginians don't like change, but every once in a while we have to update our procedures. Yeah. This is one of those situations.
And I want to make sure that if we do this, we make it right here. I'm very much an open government kind of person, and I very much want the public to be informed of the things that are in the pipeline that we are going to be working on. That said, there's a number of things on this list here that there isn't a choice. We don't have a choice. We got to issue the permit. To that degree, why spend the money here to advertise something and maybe get some folks' hopes up that they can actually, you know, have a say on how it ends up if we don't have a choice? But anyway, let me throw the floor open here for discussion or questions from the board. Mr. Ballard.
I think any step in the forward direction is a good one. I personally was kind of hoping for maybe a little bit more. I understand maybe we need to take baby steps, but you know, I was envisioning some sort of notice system that might be pushed to people that I could subscribe to, check the Eastern Shore box on a website, and be emailed all applications that are interested in that area.
Maybe with automation, we could looked at that. I mean, I envisioned with the notice on the web that somehow as we do our clerical work and our engineer draft up notices and we prepare it for the newspaper and we typed up that information in a sort of data field, it automatically loads to our computer database, it automatically loads to our website. And if we could automate some process that if someone's expressed an interest in receiving notice that a new project is on our website for public notice, it would be self-generating. And maybe that's where we got to talk to our IT folks and find out how much work that is and whether it's possible, but maybe it could be done.
Anyone else? Mr. Erskine?
Go ahead.
Ms. Buck.
I think a suggestion for the shore erosion piece.
Number six.
Okay. Under 28.2.1207D, the expedited process is only when the erosion has been caused by a discrete identifiable weather event that was the subject of a declaration of emergency by the governor or governing body of the locality. That's paraphrasing a bit, but it might be useful to put that limiting language in that for that piece if we're not going to be requiring public notice and having an expedited process.
We could do that. I think I thought about maybe leaving it a little more open here. If we talk about public beaches, we're talking about 20 miles of waterfront in the Commonwealth that are just designated as public beaches. It's not every beach in the state. Certainly that code section certainly specified that expedited process for that situation, and certainly we could limit it to that. That's no problem. I think it gets us consistent with the code. It addresses what the General Assembly wanted us to do. I guess the question would be, is there other opportunities for beach nourishment that didn't follow a storm or natural disaster, but also in the city or locality realized, gosh, we got to do something, and we could go through expedited process. But on the other hand, if it's a gradual change, you know, maybe the city should be keeping up with it, the localities should be keeping up with it a little better, and they still have to public notice it in those situations. So that was kind of some of the thinking around that subject as I put that sentence in there, but it was really in response to that requirement code.
And certainly plenty of time to refine this to get it right. So thank you, Ms. Buck. Mr. Erskine.
So I appreciate where this is going. I think it's important to review these, such as the commissioner said. You know, it's been a while. I agree with Mr. Ballard that it would be nice to have even more reach into either putting these things on the commission website or eliminating the need for the public notice in some cases. I guess I do want to reiterate that this commission staff, the commission, as well as, for example, the shellfish industry has been very proactive in making sure that the public notice process has been very transparent and wide-reaching in the stakeholders that have an interest in this are noticed. And I know several of us on the commission have had testimony in front of us that have said, gosh, if I only knew that this was public notice for X project, whatever it may be. In those cases, I understand you're holding the public notice in place.
That's correct.
But I just want to make sure in this process, as we go to the regulatory review and it comes back to the commission for a public hearing, that we maintain that public notice process in all of this.
Yeah, if we're still going to require public notice for the vast majority of permits that we have to issue. And as you recall, this last session, the General Assembly changed the public notice requirements for Oyster Ground leases. This doesn't really address Oyster Ground leases at all.
Right.
This is just for our permits for use of state submerged lands. It might include aquaculture projects when they require permits. But it wouldn't really affect the Oyster Ground leasing notice because that's set in code elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And also it wouldn't affect, at this point, the regulation that allows for on-bottom aquaculture activity because that's covered by code or regulation without a permit.
Right. Thank you.
Other discussion from the commission? Tony, number seven, which is the no permit necessary piers. And
Yes, sir.
We review those, of course, and we issue the permits for those. No permits necessary for them. We review them to make sure that they're not running afoul of oyster leases and whatnot. I guess I just would say that I have a niggling concern in the back of my head here is that private pier notices are potentially important to the neighbors, and that noticing them may head off discontent within the community that a pier is getting upgraded or improved or there's work going on and they weren't notified. I don't know if I just want to raise that as a concern, because we do have some, at times, complaints for people that suddenly there's a new pier going up next door and they didn't know and now they have some issues, even though they don't have standing.
That's a couple issues. And over the last, and again, this is an issue that kind of has evolved with regard to how private piers are processed. And it's evolved through code changes and limits and other requirements related to private oyster leases. On one hand, if a pier is not on an oyster lease, it's in front of someone's property, fairly within their riparian area, it does not require a permit from the commission. It's authorized by statute. So we don't go through any review process, really, other than to recognize that that pier is authorized by statute, as we believe it, and we let that person know. In reality, those folks could go out and build a pier, looking at the code, and if they stuck with the limits in the code, they weren't in violation for not having submitted an application to us. They had within their right to do that. But as the code has evolved over the years, from just a simple statement that private peers are authorized, that wasn't quite those words, but that was basically all it said, that any limits on it all, limits have been placed on it. Now if you go over 400 square foot of LN, you've got to get a permit for that structure from the commission. If your boathouse goes over 700 square feet, you've got to get a permit. And as a caveat, if it's under 700 square feet, we've got to notify the neighbors, and then they get a chance to comment. And when they protest a boathouse, then we public notice it. And that would not change in this situation. We would issue a public notice if we get a protest from the neighbors based on the way the code is written for boathouses and gazebos over that 400 square foot area that's authorized by code. In addition, language got put in relative to how we deal with oyster leases. I guess the concern was probably in the 90s or so that, you know, we're getting a lot of proliferation of private piers, and many of our applications deal with private piers. And what used to be large tracts of land were being subdivided into smaller lots, and lots of piers were going in, and they were going in over oyster leases, and there was concern about conflicts and impacts and, you know, reduction in use of the lease bottom. And so the General Assembly said if it's less than 100 feet, it's still authorized by statute if it goes over a lease, but once it gets over 100 feet, it may require a permit if the oyster ground is productive. So we got to do an analysis of what's productive, and then if it's productive, we require a permit, and if the oyster ground leaseholder protests, doesn't want it there, we go through this process to try and find the least damaging area on the lease for the pier. So just to sort of put it in perspective, a lot has changed relative to private piers and what we review. A lot still does not require a permit. And so this Section 7 was just geared at that private pier leaseholder conflict. And we shall issue a permit based on the code, but we have to work with the leaseholder on the pier. So I guess it's, you know, kind of going back to your first thought that if we public notice something and there's really nothing we can do about it, are we accomplishing a whole lot? But on the other hand, it does give the public a little bit of idea of what's going on and some expectation of what is being done near them. So anyway.
Well, thanks for addressing that and my concerns. And I still have those concerns. And some of it's a little bit of perception issue. I mean, looking at what you've drafted there as a straw man, as a starting point, I could see somebody looking at that and say, well, you no longer are going to notice public or private peers, period.
Right.
That's going to be their assumption, and it's a lot more nuanced than that.
Right.
And I think that we're going to need to be a lot more nuanced than just that.
And that's I think that's a very valid point. after I discussed this with you, I unfortunately didn't take the time to try and find the words to describe what you said for the change in the regulation draft, but I think we can do that as we move along.
We have smart people on staff.
Sure, we'll find someone to come up with something.
We'll find someone. Are there other questions from the commission, or is there a sense of how you all would like this to proceed from here? Do you think this is worth pursuing? Mr. Taggart.
Yes, I think it's worth pursuing. I will just note that on the Eastern Shore, and probably like a lot of other rural areas, Internet service is spotty at best. So it's not as though it's as ubiquitous as it might be here in the Hampton Roads area. I know the Chamber of Commerce on the Eastern Shore is, in fact, working on trying to increase our connectivity because it is such a large problem. So it's not as though a public notice that's on a website will be seen by everyone, particularly people who live on the fringes where these docks and these waterways are.
Good point. Anybody have a sense on how to proceed from here, Mr. Erskine?
I'd make a motion to send this to the Regulatory Review Committee in its entirety that you propose, 1 through 7.
Okay. Second.
It's a motion by Mr. Erskine to have this reviewed by the Regulatory Review Committee and to, I assume, bring it back before the commission once that's fully baked?
Bring it to staff and then bring it back to commission.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And this is second by Mrs. Cohen. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? The chair votes aye as well. Marching orders, Mr. Watkinson. Go find somebody smart on staff. You have lots of choices. Any volunteers? Yeah, I don't see anybody volunteering.
Raise your hand. I don't understand.
I don't know why they're not volunteering for this.